We're fired up to have you today, part two of our episode featuring two officers from the National Guard. As part of our effort to cover topics that you, our listeners, want to hear about, Major Carla Raisler of the Kentucky National Guard and First Lieutenant Brock Young of the California National Guard are here with us in the huddle. Part two of our podcast on the Total Army concept will discuss the training challenges of the National Guard officer. This is a Leaders Huddle Podcast, episode 22, a deep dive into the Total Army concept. Part 2. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain Micah Klein, your host for today's episode. Our first guest is Major Carla Raisler. Major Raisler enlisted into the Kentucky National Guard shortly after 9/11 and was commissioned as a signal officer from the University of Kentucky. Upon her completion of Signal Officer Basic Course, Major Raisler was assigned to the HHB 138th Field Artillery. In 2006, she deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom as a tactical intelligence officer for HHC 149th Armored Brigade, and again in 2011, she was deployed in support of Operation Enduring Freedom with the Kentucky Agribusiness Development Team as an agribusiness mentor and female engagement team leader. She has commanded the 138th Signal Company and the 133rd Mobile Public Affairs Detachment. She has served in multiple positions on active duty for special work and in federal technician positions for the Kentucky National Guard. She currently works as a team chief for Defense Cyber Operations Element. She also works in a civilian capacity as a cybersecurity professional in the healthcare industry. First Lieutenant Brock Young enlisted in the U.S. Army as a mechanized infantryman in 1996, where he deployed to Bosnia and served in every position of the Bradley Fighting Vehicle, as well as team leader. He joined the California Army National Guard in 1999 as an infantry M60 machine gunner. First Lieutenant Young was activated for a homeland security mission following 9/11 and later deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom with Alpha Company, 1st of the 185th Infantry, in 2003 as an infantry team leader and dismount element leader. Transferring into the MP Corps, he deployed to Kosovo in 2009 as the American Commanding General's Protective Security NCOIC. He also served as squad leader and platoon sergeant, and then commissioned through the Alabama Military Academy's State Accelerated OCS program in 2011. Upon completion of MP Bullock, he was chosen as the California Army National Guard Commander's aide-de-camp as an AGR position. First Lieutenant Young deployed to and served as the assistant officer in charge of the Maximum Security Detention Facility on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba in 2014, and returned and served as a full-time battalion operations officer for the 185th MP Battalion. First Lieutenant Young is currently the battalion S1 for the 185th MP Battalion. This episode is our second part, and it will take a deep dive into what it's like to be on everything training management in the Guard and Reserve. So my first question is for Brock. Brock, as a junior officer in the Guard, what are some of your biggest challenges related to maintaining readiness and training competency, and how do you deal with them?
Well, Micah, thank you for having me back. Honestly, I find from an M-Day standpoint, that traditional soldier standpoint, maintaining professional competency is one of the most difficult things we run into, because soldiers aren't given time during drill weekends, and it's not so much given time, there is just no time during a drill weekend in order to develop that personal competency that is required of leaders, whether it's, you know, Sergeant E5, Sergeant Major, Second Lieutenant through Captain. It requires a large amount of personal time and personal sacrifice between the months to log into the military forums, to log into items like S1Net, read publications, read updates on regulations, read whatever updates on your particular MOS. I'm lucky in the fact that my job is also my hobby. I love the Army. I've been in the Army 21 years. This is just something I love doing. My friends call me weird because I'll spend my free time reading a publication, reading an AR, and they just kind of were like, okay, that's new and different. But that's ultimately what is required for me to maintain my personal and professional competency towards my job. Being an officer in the reserve components, obviously you need to take an assessment of that. You need to understand that there's going to be a large amount of time that you're going to have to spend on self-development, because there's just not going to be that army time that is going to be spent for you to read, for you to update yourself, for you to go through your personal records. And that's, again, that's across the leadership board down into the NCO ranks. How I deal with it, again, is I try to push out information. If I find something good as far as leadership development or a tool that makes my development more efficient, I'll push that out to a group of contacts that I've developed over the years. You know, young lieutenants, S&P cadets that I've had taken, you know, that have asked me to send them information whenever I find something. And that's pretty much how I handle it. I try to make things as easy as possible for my subordinates, looking at it from the standpoint that I may do this full time, but they don't. So how do I make their lives easier? So that's the reason I develop the training I develop. I read as much as I do and try to push that information and impart that information onto them, so they then don't have to work as hard to find it, or they can make better, more efficient use of their time when they have it available.
That is unique, but that's awesome. That's inspiring. Thanks. So Carla, in our last episode, you talked about a large scale training exercise, in which it sounded like really it was just the ideal situation where everybody's training, everybody's feeling good about doing their jobs, and as you said, not going to drill to sit in an orderly room. So my question for you would be, what tips do you have for planning a larger scale exercise in the Guard?
Well, Micah, the first thing you really need to do is to get into the pockets of your battalion staff. You really, a lot of times, even the unit itself is separated through miles, separate towns, that you have a hard time getting to know them. If you get to know your battalion staff and figure out who it is that is interested in planning and knows that you want to do something that's going to be realistic and relevant training and move your company ahead, then that's where it starts. Once you get them involved, then I think that they're the ones that know, they're the resource providers, they know where to find those resources. They're your link between your company, the brigade, and state. And so they're really the folks that can move that ball ahead for you when it comes to developing that kind of training. So that comes down to kind of mentorship, right? Like, find out who those really high-speed captains and majors are and get to know them and let them get to know you. You know, we talk about the Guard sometimes as, you know, we've mentioned the good old boy club. And the only problem with that is when you're not in it, right? So if you are dialed into that unofficial chain of people that can get things done, it really helps you to enable you to get that kind of training that you want completed.
All right, that's great. That is definitely great advice. So did you know any of the company commanders that were in your battalion? Like, I mean, I'm sure you knew of them type thing, and maybe you'd ran into them once or twice, but in the towns next to you or not too far away. And I know that, look, you could be a signal company, and then down the road is, you know, the quartermaster company, and you're probably not talking a whole lot, but did you have any relationships with area towns guard units? And if so, any tips that you would have for us?
Well, the number one thing I tell my junior officers is go to the planned events throughout the year, the dining out, the conferences, the National Guard Association conference in your state, because that's where people are talking and meeting each other and getting to know each other. And you get a lot more accomplished after you've shared a soda or a glass of water with one another, I would say, moving forward. So it's really just having that social interaction there, because that's really where people get to know each other. And then outside of that, whenever there was an FTX, As like a signal, you know, when I was the signal company commander, it had been years since the artillery had been out to do live fire, because we had been caught up in doing a lot of missions overseas with convoy security. So we were really, you know, we were in the process of what we call, you know, the re-red And so got down there, and I was out down there at the, in the field with those guys. I made it a point to go to each one of those firing points and talk to that officer and meet him and say, hey, I'm your signal company commander. What can I do for you? What is it that you're missing? Where are we missing this connection? Because it's been so long since I've been out here. And, you know, I have a lieutenant look at me and be like, you know, I haven't fired since OBC. So we really, one, we laid it all out there. Like, hey, this is me being honest and transparent. What can I do for you? And then establishing that relationship so that they knew who to call when they needed something. And I knew who to go to if I needed to get the job done for them.
Very cool.
Mike, if I could. I think to caveat on Long Bad, it's not just getting to know your subordinate commanders, your left and right commanders. As a platoon leader, it's also getting to know your battalion commander. You know, there are going to be guard officers out there, lieutenants, second lieutenants, who have never met their senior raider. I would recommend them getting on their senior raider's calendar, the battalion commander's calendar, finding the battalion XO, getting on their calendar. Hey, sir, ma'am, do you mind if I give you a call sometime just to talk about some stuff? That also gets your name out there and can show you. It's like, yeah, no, I've got a platoon. My platoon is awesome. If you've got a platoon level mission, we would like it. So now that person, you've just planted a seed in that person's head. So then, okay, we've got this big multi-level echelon event, especially in the MP Corps that usually works in MP platoon and MP squad levels. That's where you get your bang for the buck. And so that major or lieutenant colonel is looking for a platoon out there. They're not just going to have to go around to find someone. It's like, wait a minute, I know this platoon leader who's already reached out to me and said he's good to go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so thanks. That's, Brock, that's absolutely perfect. And also from the senior office, from the field grade side, is that I always take a junior officer with me whenever I'm going to talk to my battalion or brigade commander. And the first thing I do when I walk in is, sir, ma'am, let me introduce you to Lieutenant so-and-so. He or she is one of my platoon leaders, or, you know, insert job description here and get them to link up. Because sometimes it's hard as a junior officer. You're still kind of gun shy when it comes to talking to those senior officers. So it is imperative that senior captains and junior field grade officers who are now comfortable talking to their senior officers always have a junior officer with them to help that junior officer meet that staff.
Oh yeah, I love that. That's a great idea. So hopefully everybody who is out there listening hears that and potentially writes that one down. That's a great tip. All right, so transitioning to the next question. So Barack, I'd love to know what you're doing as a National Guardsman to prepare for company command. And what advice do you have to offer our listeners that are out there that are trying to go to the full captain's career course for active duty?
Roger, company command, it's coming. It's a must-have key developmental position for an officer. Right now, what I do, I look at what my peers are doing. I'm in a position right now as a battalion S1 where I could see how they're either strong or how they're failing. I can see what issues they're having at the lower level. And then I write it down and basically write down in my book, the little do's and don'ts book that I carry with me. Issues that I see that are taking place across the board or with my battalion commander in particular. What does he want? What is he looking for? The other things are I have access to, and obviously people should have access to, various courses and training that are developed specifically for first sergeants and company commanders. Maybe I'm not able to sit in those courses, but I can definitely download the slide decks and read through them and just kind of update myself on the requirements and needs as a future company commander. And ultimately, I ask people to say, hey, what do you think I should be doing right now? You know, I ask my battalion commander, I ask battalion XO, I ask friends of mine, peers, and other field grade officers that I know and am still in contact with. To sit down with them and be like, okay, what do you think I need to do to position myself for my dream company command or even a follow-on company command? Being AGR, I'm probably going to transition into the recruiting and retention command someday. So what can I do to position myself to be better positioned for that? And then also not torpedo my own career right now. Regarding the captain's career course, reserve component officers, I think their time is honestly better spent trying to go to the reserve component. Captain's career course, the 2 weeks, Nothing against the active component captain's career course. However, I know from my own experience, we graduated with an active component class. Great captains. However, they had been there for, 6 weeks? We knocked ours out in four. I think it's just the guard because the guard condensed timetable. I like the reserve component. But no matter what they do, no matter what they're looking for, whether it's the reserve component captain's career course or the active component captain's career course, I say don't wait. As soon as you're eligible to go to school, as soon as you knock out that platoon leader time, as soon as somebody gives you the north-south, go ahead and go to the school. Don't wait until you're ready to be promoted to major to knock out captain's career course. I think half my class that I went to was all captains who had just stopped. Their careers had stopped until they could complete their captain's career course and move on. That's the best advice I can give, is just don't wait to go to school. Go as soon as you're eligible and everything else will come.
And did you go during your 2 week, did you do that in lieu of your 2 week annual requirement during presumably the summer, or how did that work?
Well, like Carla said, 1 week in a month, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year is kind of antiquated. I went my second half of my captain's career course. I went in December. I will then do a 21-day AT this summer. It's just the actual regulation states up to 29 days of AT. It's a 14-day minimum or 15-day minimum, excuse me, on AT. So it's needs of the Army. As long as I know that, that's the way it is. I accept the fact that, again, being AGR, I have no my time. It's all Army time. But for the M-Day leaders, they need to understand that, yeah, you're going to have to go to this school during the winter, fall and winter time frame. And then, yes, you as an officer, company commander, platoon leader are going to have to go to AT with your unit.
That's very cool. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? I know that one thing that I always regretted that I never got to do in my reserve unit before I commissioned and moved on and went on active duty was that there are a lot of opportunities out there that, people don't know about in terms of training overseas and doing your AT in a different country. I know that my company commander was trying very hard, and we didn't end up doing it, but to do Bright Star in Egypt for one of our AT sessions. So there are a lot of good opportunities. So I guess missing out on, going to school and then having to do AT is not necessarily a bad thing either.
One of the ways that I leverage it with my civilian employer is that I take whatever school that I have coming up. I'm leaving for my two-week command general staff college this weekend. And so I take the POI or, a condensed civilian version of what I'm going to do while I'm there, and I let them know, hey, this is the benefit of me going. I'm a cybersecurity professional. I'm getting ready to do a cybersecurity exercise in April. So I take that information to them, and I say, this is going to make me a better employee if I do this. It's professional development. So it's great when it works out when your guard job is complementary to your civilian job, then you can show the benefit that the guards, I'm like, hey, sir, this is $5,000 worth of SAMS training that you'd have to pay for, but the guard's going to give it to me, and all I need to do is give them, all you're losing out on is my time. And they say, all right, go do great things.
That's awesome. And that's great to have an employer that is supportive. So I'm thrilled to hear that. All right. Moving on to our next question, and this is for you, Carla. Given that there's only so much time on drill weekends, right, and time is, of course, a premium, how do you balance the 350-1 requirements that you have with competing needs to maintain MOS proficiency among your formations? I know it's a loaded question, but I'd love you to chop away at that.
That's exactly what I was thinking. We'll make sure we know who gets this podcast. But no, there is a real answer to that, and it's that the first thing I do is find out what my boss's priorities are. Then I make a list. I put his priorities on the top, followed by my priorities, and then followed by the Army and the National Guard priorities. And I tackle them in that order. Not everything is going to get done, and you're going to have to accept some risks. Then it's all about seizing the opportunities and doubling up on tasks. My last unit had our lunches catered in. so no one left. We were geographically kind of remote. So I had a captive audience for an hour. So while they ate, I conducted briefing. I gave up thinking that I was going to get every single thing done, and I just worked my way through that list. Granted, taking that risk management approach where we make sure that all of the risky things definitely are at the top, and then kind of give up the idea that everybody has to be there. You know, it has to be 100% before I'll do this particular 350-1 training event. No, it's not. Kind of like we said, hip pocket training used to be the big thing. So I empower my leaders now to conduct that AR 350-1 training when they have downtime. Make sure you give me a roster. Make sure everybody signed it. But let me know that you knocked something out. Again, we talk about centralized planning, decentralized operations. If I give you what my intent is, and it's, you know, that these particular training tasks will have to be completed within this amount of time, then I'm empowering you to decentrally conduct that training and come back to me and tell me that it was done, or come back to me and tell me what resources you need. I'm the resource provider for my company, and I want you to do whatever you can to get that training done and come to me, and I will bend over backwards to give you whatever you need to take care of those soldiers.
Yeah, mission command right there. We've said it once, and I'm sure we'll say it multiple more times.
Micah, I think there's something else to caveat off what Carla said is being Guard and Reserves, a lot of that 351 training is available online. So it's important for soldiers to understand that the less time they have to spend at drill on online training, things they can do at home, things they can accomplish between drills, that's where you make your money. So then when you come into drill, you can hit the ground and you can actually start training. You can prepare for training, you actually execute training, and you're not wasting time, or at least your commander's time, on the Army Accident Avoidance course.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Carla, I did have a question. You talked about how your employer was very supportive of you attending your OES training. How did you manage sending your NCOs to NCOES, understanding that there are employers that are not as supportive, and that sometimes, you know, there are people that are fortunate and there are people that are unfortunate. How did you emphasize attending NCOES in the National Guard as a leader, and making sure that they're, you know, keeping up on their opportunities to get promoted?
Well, the first step is to know the law, understand USERRA, understand, get on there and show your soldiers what their rights are under that program, get dialed in with ESGR. They're the Employee Service Guard. Brock, you may help me out with ESGR, employee.
It's employer support of the Guard and Reserve.
There you go. I knew you had it. Employer support and Guard of the Reserve has a lot of great information. I actually pulled the information from there because I wrote my company's policy for Guard and Reserve, because I happened to be the first guardsman that they hired. And so then they realized they needed a policy, and who better to write the policy than the person that understands it. So,
yeah, really
big benefit there. So really it's understanding the law and then having that conversation with your employers. I also look for things like, I took my boss out onto a boss list, right? So once a year, twice a year, our aviation unit does give civilian employers the opportunity to spend the day on the Black Hawk and going and watching whatever type of exercise happens to be happening. Usually it goes on around annual training events so that they get a feel of what it is that I do. And you can tell they're really proud of their soldier when they get to make those experiences. So I really try to involve my employer as much as possible, and I do the same thing for my NCOs. And then I'm really good. I can write a mean memo So anytime that there's a training event that occurs, as a commander, I make sure they have to go to NCOES or there's, you know, their OES, that I take the time to write the soldier an employee memo that tells them, hey, employee, I'm really glad you've given me, you know, Sergeant Smith. He's doing great things for the Guard. We really appreciate your support to the country. Here's the link for the Army, you know, the Employee Support and Guard Reserve website. It'll give you all the information you need to know about the rights of your soldier and the rights of you as an employer. And here's my phone number and email address if you have any additional questions.
Yeah, I give a lot of props to our National Guard and Reserve listeners out there because I know it's difficult. I know it's hard. And of course, there is always giving that memo and letting them know that the law protects you. But, I mean, after 2 weeks coming back from training OES, NCOES, or just AT or whatever it might be, and coming back into that environment, if you've got an employer that respects the law, but at the same time makes it difficult to work there, you know, it just goes to show you how much, you know, the service in the Guard and Reserve means. So that's just great.
Kill them with kindness and make them feel like they are doing their country a service by having you as an employee.
Very good. All right. So the next question, and I'll ask this for Brock to kick us off, and then Carla, if you would like to jump in, that works as well. So in an environment where the National Guard and active component units are increasingly working together, how can junior officers prepare themselves for an environment of open communication across the scenarios? I think it's worth mentioning, and I know that this has been seen, I'm sure, I think it was even in the Army Times at one point, that National Guard and U.S. Army Reserve units are now wearing active duty brigade patches in training with them, so I'd love your thoughts on that.
Participating in the forums is one way to start. Understanding what the other components are feeling and what kind of issues they're having, I think, is a good way to start to understanding. And then understanding where the other officer is coming from, then you can better communicate with them. Just this podcast alone, it's telling everybody and showing everybody that the Reserve and National Guard officers have a unique set of problems, but so do the active duty. First and foremost, I think opening the communication is knowing and understanding that we all come from different places, but we all want the same outcome, and then moving on from there.
Yeah, good point. Carla, your thoughts?
Oh, so I'm really excited about this because that unit you're talking about is Kentucky Guardsmen. that happened this past October. Tennessee and Kentucky have become a part of 101st Airborne Division's Sustainment Brigade. And, you know, 80% of logistics happens in the Guard and Reserve. So this is a really great opportunity. You know, we've become an operational force over the last 15 years, but now with deployments slowing down, which is a good thing, we have to maintain that capability. And the best way to do it is for the reserve component and the active duty to work together through training events, through partnership programs. So right now we've got the Army's Associated Unit Pilot Program, which will last for the next 3 years, where we have these units that will embed with the active duty units, and they'll get to do that training. The Guard soldiers love it. You know, imagine being able to put on, a Guardsman being able to put on that 101st Airborne patch. There's a lot of culture and history, and so they're very excited to be part of it. At the same time, you know, we bring a certain level of experience to the fight with our civilian background, that especially in logistics, that is really beneficial to the active duty component, as far as, you know, people that actually work for UPS that on Monday through Friday can be part of the 101st on Saturday and Sunday. So those are really great. The best way I have found as an officer is to, as Barack said, get to know your active duty counterparts. If it's through active duty schools, going to different training events, I build relationships with my active duty counterparts. Heck, some of my best friends are active duty, right? So I strongly encourage all junior officers to build the relationships with active duty and joint services personnel. You never know when you're gonna when they are going to come in handy. That relationship's gonna come in handy downrange, or even when you're trying to get training resources on an active duty base.
That's a great point. One thing that I tell my cadets here so often is that if you have National Guard and Reserve units that are attached to your formations, go around and get to know the soldiers. Ask them what their jobs are in the civilian sector, because that soldier who is a laundry and bath specialist could, you know, potentially, for example, work for FedEx and you're doing log planning or convoy planning, and they've got a great technique that they can use from their civilian employment in order to make your life a whole lot easier. Brock, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, absolutely. That's, like Carlos said earlier, that's the combat multiplier with the Guard and Reserves. You don't just get a soldier, sergeant, military police, sergeant first class, signal NCO. You get someone who's also a carpenter, a police officer, an ATF agent. I actually had once upon a time a specialist who was a doctor. He didn't want to do anything, but that was his thing. He wanted to serve his country, but he didn't really want any responsibility. So that was very cool. In regards to actually learning from the other components in the active duty, we in the Guard have an opportunity to apply for short tours. There's a website called Tour of Duty where Army officers, enlisted grades as well, can apply for positions, anywhere from 3 months to 6 months to a year to 2 year positions, Title 10, Title 32 tours at National Guard Bureau, at the Pentagon, at various locations across the United States, and even overseas. Deciding to augment another unit, being that one lone person that says, yeah, sure, I'll fill your hole. I have not done it myself, but I've talked to many people who have. A friend of mine just got back from the Ukraine. They said it was excellent, an excellent opportunity to grow and learn from not just other components, but other guards, other countries, and things like that, I think, are definitely valuable, a valuable tool in learning and growing as an officer.
Very good. Carla, getting back to, not to jump around, but have you heard any initial rumblings with the pairing that's going on between the 101st and then Kentucky and Tennessee? And is that an opportunity, or do you see that as an opportunity for some potential Guard units to get an additional money for training or a training time, range time, whatever it may be? Obviously, low charge or free of charge.
I think that it's hands down a great opportunity on the funding side to be able to find unique ways to get additional training. So, we have come to a point for almost all of my career, anything I ever asked for, I got. And now I have to learn to really be much more fiscally restrained and getting the same kind of training done that we talked about earlier, becoming creative in your training plans. So while I do not know how the pots of money are going to work out for this type of training, what I suspect is that I have seen from our Joint Chiefs of Staff that there was talk about increasing the number of AT days available to us throughout the year, and giving us more days to utilize for training. In my personal opinion, I would love to see us have that additional pot, and then based on the needs of the unit, choosing to exercise or execute that funding. So I'm really excited to see what happens going forward with the 101st and the Kentucky and Tennessee soldiers. I know that for myself in cybersecurity, we just got a cyber protection team here in Kentucky as well. And with that came some additional funding. And we talk about extra training. So those cybersecurity professionals have to get trained up. And so they've got a lot of extra funding. I've got a unit that's looking at, a deployment, and the deployment will allow them to get the training that they need. So I think NGB, a lot of three-letter agencies, as well as all 54 states and territories are trying to find unique ways to make sure their soldiers get the best training possible.
That's great. So my last question, or second to last probably, because I like to talk. But Brock, you're AGR, and I know that that's sort of a hot button topic that people are interested in. So for any of our National Guardsmen or reservists that are out there that are for Guard M Day, for Reserve that are TPU, what recommendations or advice could you offer them for going AGR if that's a program that they're interested in looking into?
First and foremost, Micah, I'd say get your name out there. Let your battalion commander, senior raider, know who you are. Let them know your work ethic. Make a name for yourself in that aspect. Next, look for what they call ADSW or ADOS, active duty operational support, active duty special work. Look for those positions. Those are the short-term orders, you know, month here, 3 months there, 6 months here. That will give you the opportunity to get ingrained with those units that may not have AGR positions available right now, but you'll be doing a job for them and they will be able to see your work ethic and what you produce. And then also keep an eye on your state's jobs board. Most I know California's got one on their National Guard, their public National Guard page. It'll have job positions and job openings for AGR positions. Look at that and accept the fact that you're probably not going to find too many positions as a combat support or combat arms guy, but you'll find several positions for AG, for logistics, for the cyber and the 25 series. Except the fact that if you want an AGR, you may have to get out of your comfort zone and do something you're not accustomed to, being an aide de camp. That's how I got in. I applied while I was at Bullock for an aide de camp position. And as soon as I graduated Bullock, I went straight to an aide de camp position. It kind of put my platoon leader time on hold for a little bit. But again, I would have never thought that would be a good fit for me. But being an aide de camp, I learned so much about the strategic level planning and operational planning of the National Guard that information is just, I can't put a monetary value on that information. So again, and then find mentors. Hey, sir, you're an AGR. How did you get it to be an AGR? Hey, ma'am, you're an AGR. How did you get to be an AGR? What things do you think I should do to prepare myself? What schools, what branch should I try to reach out and get? And then go from there.
Very cool. So as promised, I do have one more question, and I'll shoot this to Carla first, and then Brock, if you want to jump in, go for it. I'd love to hear any resources that you'd recommend for leaders in the National Guard or Reserve to look into in terms of professional development and their downtime.
Well, I would say, well, since I get to go first, that means I get to say Junior Officer Forum, right?
Of course, why not?
I totally stole my answer.
I do. If I got to go first, I get to say it. But it really is. Junior Officer Forum. Military OneSource is a really great resource provider for M-Day soldiers and probably, you know, everybody, but to help them find resources in their area on the personal family readiness side of the file there. And then I really enjoy, enjoy is a strong word, but NoSuite F1Net has been extremely educational for me over the years. They send out an email roll up once a week or so, and that kind of dials you into what regulations are changing, what opportunities are available. You'll find a lot of really great F1 type information through there. And then, you know, for me, I get the early bird defense email every day. And so I kind of start my day off with going through what's going on in the military, and it breaks it down into the components, you know, what's going on in the Marines, what's going on in the Navy, what are the top stories. So it keeps me on top of what's happening throughout the services without having any of the same kind of spin on it that some of our other news sources or news outlets have. So if you go to Defense News or militarytimes.com, you can sign up for you can get on their distro list, and you can choose to either get one in the morning or one in the afternoon. but it breaks down the top stories in the Department of Defense. And so to me, it's a really great resource to keep yourself knowledgeable about what's happening around the service and throughout the Department of Defense.
Awesome. And I will toss this to you, Brock. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, my answer is definitely going to be shorter since you stole most of mine. junior officer, absolutely. I am absolutely an advocate for junior officer. Carla and I are both facilitators for the Army National Guard, USAR community. That's where we junior officers can go to ask questions without the fear of their NCOs kind of looking at them sideways. Like Carla, S1Net. The amount of information that is available in S1Net is just undescribable. You can find everything you need there as a young officer, from, you know, letters of instruction for running ranges to SOPs. You name it, it's there. And if it's not there, you can ask for it and somebody will find it. Which along with MilSuite, you also have the various protection nets, sustain net, things like that, that are more specific to the different branches. But MilSuite is an outstanding tool that I recommend all officers be part of. You've seen some training that I put together. It always references MilSuite or sends people to MilSuite. So I'm totally an advocate of MilSuite. One that has been stated so far is Task and Purpose. It's an online kind of blog and website that you can go to that has up-to-date kind of military-centric items of various types, news, reports, and they're written by soldiers and officers for the most part. You can actually get ideas and things that people have written that are at your level. And past that, Carla did an excellent job of saying everything else as far as the resources. Military One Source, I've used it myself. I have directed soldiers to use it. It's for everything from financial counseling to personal grief counseling to divorce counseling. And it's all free, and it's all a benefit to soldiers and officers to use. And I totally recommend all those.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you both for coming on and joining us in the Leaders Huddle. This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In the next episode, we're going to sit down with three military spouses and ask them everything that they ever learned about supporting their significant other in their service. You can connect with us on iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss. So please leave a comment on iTunes or through the CalDOL-sponsored Facebook page, Junior Officer Forum, and the Twitter handle, @JuniorOfficer. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others.
The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.